A character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Wrestling show. I get to play host this day, and it's Kevin. It has become usual here now for anything Pro Wrestling Ohio related. Mr. Dan Keister, how is your bet playing out there?
It looks pretty good. We'll just say that we're playing with imaginary paper clips and hoping to see things go well in the sporting world.
Yes. Paperclips. That does work pretty well.
Yes, especially when the pile is growing. I'm saddened by my Missouri Tigers. I talked them up last game, and now we've lost two games in a row. But I still think
they're in the
Final Four. Well, on Saturday they were robbed, but it really makes me sound hypocritical to bring that up because I talked about how fans were complaining about the refs last time, so I meant not to say that. But
what's his name? Did plenty of complaining for you. Jay Billis was on your side.
That's Jay Billis, Doug Gottlieb, Mike DeCourcy, and Bobby Knight have all pointed out some poor officiating at the end of that game. So I'm not alone. So at least some people have taken our side, but it doesn't make it any less painful to have lost that one.
Yes. Now, this might be starting from the tail end here, but there was also some poor officiating. We're going to try to cover here episodes 10 and 11 of Pro Wrestling Ohio, and if I'm not a jackass this time, I will actually include the links in the post itself. If I forget to do that somehow, feel free to pull up PWO News on the left-hand side of your browser there, and you should be able to find these quite easily.
You made an excellent segue there.
Yeah, and thankfully, too, you put it in the comments section last time, so that worked also. it's better to be in the actual paragraph. Anywho, back to the bad officiating. At the end of episode 10 here, the previous week, Marion Fontaine was granted a title match. It might have been 2 weeks before that, but whatever the case was, he ended up having his PWO title shot against Matt Cross, who seemingly has dropped the M-Dog nickname. But Justin Labar was the ringside, I don't know, would you call him an enforcer?
He doesn't look much like an enforcer, but he was the observer. I would call him the ringside observer as commissioner might be a better description.
Yes, and not to kind of blow by the match really in and of itself, but it was really pretty much all set up for the ending anyway, where the referee got knocked out. Justin Labar, the commissioner, calls for another referee. No one comes out. So he ends up calling the final moments of action. And Matt Cross ends up hitting the shooting star press on Fontaine. And Labar counts to three because everyone thinks he's down. But lo and behold, Fontaine's leg is under the rope. What did you think about this ending?
Okay, a couple things about this. First of all, and we you know, there's a lot we could do with moves in the match and stuff, but I felt like just in general this was a very well-wrestled, entertaining match leading up to the finish, and I think you would agree with that from what you said in your review. But I don't think it bears a five-minute discussion, but I think we probably ought to get that out of the way. This is a match probably worth seeking out if you like the PWO product to watch, because bell to bell, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, no, I think Cross and Fontaine work pretty well together. Just because Fontaine's lankiness, let's say, works out a little bit better when he's against someone shorter. When he's against someone like Jason Bain, it really sticks out how much skinnier he is.
Absolutely.
So I think that helps, and I just think that their styles maybe mesh a little bit better inside of the ring with all the movement that both of them have going on.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I would definitely agree with that, and you know, you've always been a pretty big proponent of Fontaine. And at first, I think most people, when they first start watching PWO, you know, we don't want this to be the steroid federation or anything, but you look at it and you're like, you know, gosh, this guy is not physically imposing. And it took me a while to get over that. I mean, when I first started watching the program, I thought they give this guy a lot of time, and I just don't see why. And I've kind of changed my attitude. I mean, he certainly carries himself with more confidence on interviews, and he's a good inside the ring as well. So I see where they're going with this, and I understand why he gets the attention that he does. As far as the match itself goes and the finish, which you were asking about earlier, one thing that if the PWO powers that be are listening to this and they want to get this tape to Marion Fontaine, because there's kind of a continuing storyline, I think it's obvious to see, of Fontaine saying that Justin Labar is out to get him. Joe Dombrowski mentioned, you know, Labar is doing a great job refereeing. And I'm sure that was the storyline. But the very first pin where M-Dog pinned Fontaine, Labar counted a two count, and Fontaine's shoulders were not down for at least the first count and a half of that. And so they kind of covered for it in the commentary, and I understand why, but maybe if he's saying, here's all these points where I'm getting ripped off, to actually go to that and to show that, even though he didn't win the match on it, that might be kind of clever. I don't know. But it was kind of unintentional foreshadowing, I guess, to the end, because that was the very first pin that Labar tried to count, and he didn't wait to see that M-Dog, I think that Fontaine's shoulders were actually down. As far as the finish itself goes, I like the storyline. I like where they went with it. The only thing to me, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Kevin, also, that didn't make a lot of sense was Aaron McGuire was the one to – it did make sense that Aaron McGuire points out that Fontaine's foot was under the rope. And they kind of showed it just a little bit longer than you might expect, but I really liked how they did that at first. And at first, Joe Dombrowski was not believing it. And then, without the benefit of replay, he kind of said, oh, well, maybe his foot was under the ropes. I would have liked to have seen them let that go until the next week, where maybe Dombrowski saying, oh, McGuire, you've got to be full of nonsense or whatever, and then to actually show the replay the next week and pick up and say, well, you know, I didn't see it. Labar didn't see it. It was obviously an honest mistake. And then everything else has been really good. But, I make these very minor nitpicky points with PWO from time to time. And maybe I don't know if you agree with that or not, but that was my thought.
Well, I think it was kind of hard for Dombrowski to hide because – Labar ended up reacting to it.
Okay, I might have missed that. I know that Fontaine's foot was still under the rope, but And then, of course, the idea was he was knocked out, so how else could he have put his foot under the rope? So, yeah, maybe I missed something.
Yeah, no, I think on his way back to the rear there, LeBar kind of got that look on his face like, oh, crap, I think I missed his foot under the rope. So, yeah, to me, I think it would have been hard for him to not say that, you know, that he changed his mind.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, that would have been, I just think letting that thing slide, though, to the next week really wouldn't have been that bad of a deal either, though, to just leave the mystery hanging out there a little bit more rather than almost confirm it. But, I mean, and then you just would have had to have had LeBar not react to it, which would have been just as easy to do. You know, he's just walking to the back.
Right.
He doesn't realize it. You know, he doesn't have to look back at the ring. I mean, he's counted to three. You know, why does he need to realize it? So, yeah, no, I think that could have worked just fine there with a couple of little tweaks.
Yeah, but overall, I do like the storyline. I just, you know, and again, I go back to when I was watching wrestling as a kid and stuff, and something like that might happen on a Bill Watts program or whatever, and if you taped it, you'd go back and look at it for yourself. And that would have been my preference, is that maybe McGuire points this out, but...
it's the heel, you know,
right.
begging for the heel, so you can't take him seriously.
Yeah, so... But good match. Again, just in general, these have been two really good episodes of PWO, so...
Yep. Okay, well... speaking of, since we did start at the ass end here, let's go back to the beginning, we could also call it the end, since there is one Omega Aaron Draven figuring into this first match here of episode 10.
Mr. Against, Segway, you're on fire tonight, sir.
Oh, maybe it's sobriety is helping out. Let's see here. Now, was it just me? And I guess this is a good question to ask somebody else that watches on a fairly regular basis. Has Draven been as absent from the program this year as I thought?
Yes, I didn't recall seeing him since Resolution, and they kept pointing out how he'd been undefeated since Resolution, but I didn't recall seeing him on the television maybe once since then. I don't know. But, yeah, they were kind of talking like he's on a hot streak, and the working with Kevin Nash was so great for him and all this. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad I was I'm not delusional then. Because I'm like, huh? Like, isn't this – is because I think you're right. I think he had one other match, and that was all, you know. And I mean, that's the other thing, too, I guess, is that we're this late on, and what was there? Was there 23 episodes, I believe, before the last Resolution? And unless they go solid the whole way until June or July there, I don't think they're going to get there this year.
No, there seems to have been a lot of repeats. They did the year-end highlight stuff, which was good, you know, matches of the year. And I guess maybe there's some administrative things that have kept their TV tapings down. But, of course, as we both know, this is 3 weeks in a row. We're not going to talk about the most recent episode, but they did have a new episode Sunday night. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll get a lot of TV between now and Resolution because, again, I am enjoying it.
Yeah, no, we're hoping to move towards being a little more current, but wishes and what actually happens when you have real jobs is a whole different ballgame. okay, we got a little bit off track there, I suppose, talking about their schedule, but... I don't know. Is it, this is now the second loss for Boone, I believe, since coming into this singles competition.
Yep.
I guess I'm not a fan of that. What is your opinion? Not a fan. Okay.
I'm not a fan. And I assume maybe there's some bigger booking plan out there for it. It doesn't appear obvious to me right now, but, you know, I mean, he's got Nate Mattson managing him. There doesn't seem to be any real reason for this losing streak. But, yeah, I thought Boone would win, you know. And again, I will say this for PWO, they don't do all that even-steven booking. I mean, you know, and maybe just because I like Boone's ability and character, so maybe I'm being too much of a fan/mark on this, and maybe they're really going somewhere. But for now, I don't like it. And, you know, you mentioned in your review, I think that the match was fair, and, yeah, I would agree with that, too. I it was fine, but it wasn't at the level of some of the others I've seen.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of those things that I started to dawn on. I was like, why did I get so pissed about something else? I'm like, oh, it's because, you know, it's an overall whole, everything since season one. When I was instant messaging with Jeremy one day. I was like, you know what, maybe I am getting spoiled because I forget which match we were talking about. I was like, but there just really aren't that many terrible matches.
No, that's right. Yeah.
It's just like
I know which match you were talking about. Yeah.
Just as I say that, it was a match that we did do some talking about there. Since there was some hype for it, it was our good friend Veda Scott against Sassy Steph. Was the match that I happened to be talking about?
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed. And Jeremy was commented on that match not being up to par. I'll focus on the positives of that match, or at least of that bell to bell or entrance to end experience. I liked the pre-match kind of histrionics by Veda Scott, refusing to high five the fans and just kind of her attitude toward the fans was pretty funny. Aaron McGuire got some sort of entendre in there about speaking about the thrust, which made me almost drop my soda while I was listening. So there were some positives with watching the match. You know, I do think exactly people – I will send people to your review because I would agree with the criticisms of some of the in-ring work in your review that was a little bit disappointing. But, again, this is a work in progress, and we know that. So.
And I think that's when I started talking to him. I'm like, ah, man, maybe I am just becoming an asshole. Maybe I'm expecting even – like, I'm like, maybe I'm expecting more than I even thought out of Pro Wrestling Ohio on a weekly basis. Like, I always say that I kind of give it let things slide a little bit more, but that one I'm like, oh, what the hell am I doing? Maybe I need to check things a little bit more because, yeah, I thought they had a good first half of the match, and then the second half just got really sloppy there.
I agree. But, again, you know, I see Veda potentially being a strong personality, and, you know, I don't know what her overall level of experience is, but I know it's not that significant with in-ring time. And, yeah, so you want to be fair. I mean, I think that there were some positives to take from it. There were a few things that had room for improvement. So that's what it is. And there were some good and some bad. So there you go.
Gotcha. Well, there's one last big thing from this episode. To me, and the other couple of things I think can also tie into other stuff in episode 11, if it so happens.
Okay.
And this one does too. Matt Mason, who was the mystery man that had come out the previous week there to confront Crimson, had a little sit down interview with our good buddy Vic Travaglione. I can't. Why can I not say Travaglione?
Auntie.
Ah, I know that I can say it more smoothly than that, but he's a good guy, and yeah. Anywho, he had a little talk with Mr. Moore, and do you kind of want to run through what he was what he had to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because we want to, I think, maybe get to the next episode, I'll just say that both Brian Castle and Gregory Iron, I thought, had good interviews on this program. Gregory
okay.
Iron fit in the old help is on the way line in his promo, which seems kind of cornball, but the way he did it was with more, like, emotion than some of the times in his interviews, and I thought it was one of his stronger interviews. I usually really enjoy Castle's interviews, and I liked it, but I thought Iron's interview was even better this week, and I thought that Moore's interview was just fantastic. I mean, I was pretty captivated by it. This whole story about CK3 and his marriage falling apart and his losing friends and having all these problems, and how he's here to bring him back and save him from himself, or however you want to do it. I really thought it was a captivating storyline. And again, the thing with PWO is they let you kind of think about these stories from week to week, because of course they had the confrontation and enough mystery about it that you didn't really know what this guy was going to say in the interview. And I thought it was possibly the highlight of the entire show. I really, really thought this was a strong interview, and this is a storyline that's continuing to play on, and I'm very intrigued by it. I really am anxious to see where it goes. So, yeah, definite major thumbs up for me on this interview, and maybe I'm not giving enough detail, but really, you know.
Yeah. Well, the main gist of it was Matt Moore used to be in a tag team with Crimson, but at that time he was known as CK3. And, yeah, as you alluded to, everything was going well, and then CK3 saw, it, well, yeah, he got divorced, and then he saw other people in his bracket signing better deals and going elsewhere. And, yeah, that's what turned him into the downward spiral that made him Crimson now. So it's a little, kind of a little bit of a Joker-esque kind of a story to go with a Joker-esque character, honestly.
Yeah, the way he presents himself, absolutely. And, you know, just the dichotomy of Moore saying, hey, I was just here to kind of see some friends, maybe find a job, get a little work, but my life's all good, you know, I'm happy with where I'm at and everything's great, and I see how sick my friend is, and it just, yeah, I thought it was a kick-ass interview. I really liked it, so that may not be a bad way to wrap up the episode, because I really thought it was a strong point of the episode.
Yep. Nope. I thought the I kind of liked the closing angle a little bit better to me. Yeah, this one was a really good one, and it was something small that you referenced earlier. About the Boone and Draven match, is that there aren't a whole lot of screwball finishes in this league, one way or the other. Like, they use them every now and again, but you know what? They definitely, both the WWE and TNA have a tendency to sometimes not want to push somebody.
Yeah.
At the expense of everybody looking kind of poor.
Yeah.
And, if they need to rebuild Benjamin Boone after that loss, I think they can do that if they so please.
Yeah, and again, we'll talk about some matches that had some less than perfectly clean finishes as well, and they mean something in PWO, as you mentioned, because it's not every match. So, absolutely.
Yep. And, well, this one did kind of run a little bit into both episodes because I skipped over, Bobby Beverly's interview from the previous week.
Yes, another strong interview. I'd forgotten that also.
But, I don't know why I didn't keep that open in that other tab anyway. But moving on, though, Bobby Beverly started off the next show against Johnny Gargano. And, yes, there did happen to be, it was a screwball finish, because the ref actually counted Johnny Gargano down for the three after interference by the Ski Mask Man. Who turned out to not be the Ski Mask Man. It was only Bobby Shields dressing up in a ski mask. Were you as fully amused as me that they made it sound like a ski mask can only be purchased at specialty shops and not just a discount item at Walmart, Target, insert store here kind of a deal?
Yeah, I think that I was pretty entertained by that. Not to give, there's nothing we're giving away, but I've watched the most recent episode and some of Aaron McGuire's comments about how he knows that the man in the ski mask likes outdoors and cold weather and skiing and some of these just kind of silly comments are kind of worth looking forward to in what I guess is episode 12. But yeah, that's right. I mean, I'll tell you this: when PWO decides they're going to run an angle, they do it with a straight face and they run it hard, and as it should be, it adds to the gravity of situations there. So yeah, that's worth mentioning. And another thing about this match, again, I believe it was this match. I hope I'm not getting confused. This Gargano Shield match is, I hope I don't have the wrong episode, but I don't think I do, is the line of, it's the quantity of thrust that we're getting this week, not the quality, that is overwhelming from Bobby Beverly. And from Mr. McGuire, that again had me
yes,
laughing uproariously.
That indeed was the match in question. And I did kind of wonder, I'm like, oh my gosh, but by the end of this episode, I'm like, oh, okay, he could have thrust for about three more minutes and it might have filled in some of the other time that they used up re-showing the ski mask man angle, and there was something else that seemed to get a little too much time, in my opinion. Oh man, but quality and match wise, what did you think of this one?
Very good, very good. Again, if you don't take away for the screwy finish, these guys are strong wrestlers and smooth and good back and forth action. I was enjoying it and wasn't shocked by the finish. I mean, Gargano has not been, and of course, at Resolution, it was a clean finish against M-Dog, but you can't have the guy lose clean too often. I mean, considering how they built him up as the best wrestler in the promotion for a long period of time. So I'm not too critical of the finish. I mean, it all makes sense that Sex Appeal is just viciously going after whatever they can. And, again, taking advantage of Johnny Gargano that they've injured in the past. So, these episodes are strong. I mean, these have been really, really good TV, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree that even now they any time Gargano comes back, which seems to be slightly more recent this episode, but or this season, I should say. They've done a good job of really the last 2 years of hyping him up anytime he comes in. And he had such a strong run to start off the promotion that it helps. It's easy to kind of pick up on that.
No, absolutely. Yeah, they have to have a balance of treating him like a big deal, which he is, without, he's wrestling other places, so it's kind of hard for him to be the. I think that M Dog is a great choice for their kind of flagship guy right now.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, 'cause he's evidently he's not doing as much, for Dragon Gate USA and other people. Yeah, and I had forgotten too that Beverly's promo from the week before. I think that was one that I said. This is one of the reasons when you had asked me the question at the end of the last audio, who I would pick leaving next. I believe that his promo is like, yeah, this is one of the reasons why I think he would get picked next.
He's carrying himself
So.
well, on the mic, in the ring, in every way. I would, and again, we were pretty much in agreement that we had some solid picks with he and Shields and Ben Boone. So those are all strong candidates, in my opinion.
Okie dokie. Well, the next part here was Marion Fontaine taking a camera crew, which I'm sure is really more of just a cameraman, into Justin Labar's office, who was talking to Vic Travaglianti. If I say it enough, it will sink in. I don't know. As I put in the write-up, I've seen this happen in pretty much every organization. Doesn't he pretty much? Doesn't Labar just have to give Fontaine another rematch and just be done with it? Or am I like trying to oversell my annoyance with this? We have management over a barrel.
No.
Act that everybody seems to be doing these days.
No, there's no need for that. And it doesn't really make any sense as to why. I mean, like in my job, and I assume in your job, and in most people's jobs, like you kind of go out and bust your ass and do the best you can. And yeah, there are people that oversee you, and maybe you'll screw up and get fired at some point, but it's not very likely if you're at all competent. They're trying to make Labar out to be competent. This should be presented as a. I don't even mind Fontaine's kind of "you hate me, Labar, and this is unfair," blah blah blah. But this, he should have no power. There's no reason for him to have power. That's a gap in logic for him to have power. I mean, it is what it is. But
Yeah.
I was fine with it till he's like, "Well, we're going to shut off the camera and negotiate." It's like, no, you're the one that asked for the camera. So if you wanted to negotiate without the camera, then we didn't have to see this on TV.
Yeah, I mean, at most, he should really just get a rematch. And it's just like, you know what? I screwed up. You get a rematch. That's it.
Yeah,
I won't be at ringside this time. I can't screw it up. You know what? You can't say that it's a screw job. I'm out. That seems like that's all he could. That's all he should do. It's just like, just grant it again.
Yeah,
And everything's easy to go.
I don't mean to interrupt, Kevin. I'm sorry. The
No,
thing
not at all.
is like we've had plenty of discussions on Labar, more last season than this season. And as far as him being like an earnest, try-hard commissioner, he plays that pretty well. I mean, here's this guy trying to do a good job. I don't have a real problem with that. This thought that it's almost like they're just trying to make a storyline where there doesn't need to be one to keep him involved, though. I mean, Jack Tunney wasn't on my TV every week. Bill Watts wasn't on my TV every week, and he's the best authority figure I've ever seen in wrestling. You know, yeah, it should be simple. Okay, you get another shot. My bad. But guess what? I'm in charge, and, you know, we're going to be fair, but I'm not going to kiss your ass over this. Just, you know, you go out there. If you can beat him, great. If you can't, so be it. It's not like you don't deserve anything beyond a rematch. I mean, the man was beating you. You didn't have him beat. So you're right back where you were, and we'll settle this thing, period. It's not too complicated.
No. And speaking of, I was going to skip ahead of something. I had a segue, and I just fucked myself. The next part was, to me, the best part of the show.
Yes.
Crimson replied to... to Matt Moore about his suggestion, you know, to help him become a better person. He pretty much said, you know what, I'm not going to kick your ass right now, but I'll tell you what, if you back off, I'll let you alone.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like that message?
Oh, God, I went back and watched that one a couple times. I mean, and again, this is worth seeking out. If you're going to the trouble of listening to this audio and you're not watching PWO, you can get it on the website, whatever. Go find this interview, because here's this guy in this, you know, joker, whatever type of makeup. The camera work on this stuff is incredible, in my opinion, for the level of budget of show that PWO is. And he's just delivering this kind of sick, effed up message of anger and hate, but some compassion and conflict and all these different things. And man, he's just killing it. You're looking at this guy as much of a character as an Undertaker or a Sting back when he was coming from the rafters, and that was never based off his interview ability. I mean, you know, you see this and you're like, this is an effed up guy, and he's going through all these conflicting emotions, and damn, yeah, no, that was great. That's it.
Yeah, no, it was just kind of funny because Jeremy hit me up about it, and he goes, Crimson could be my new favorite character in all of wrestling. And I hadn't done my review yet. And after I watched that, I was like, "Oh, okay."
It's an easy one. It's an easy argument to defend, because WWE doesn't do interviews like that. I mean, they don't. I mean, Undertaker and Triple H maybe, and you know they're building that up this week with all those talking about the match and stuff, which is great. I mean, you get these debates and soliloquies for. Soliloquies for 20 minutes. I'm doing a Trevliani talk there. But, you know, you have all this. You don't have the sit-down, look-at-the-camera interview where you express yourself, and it's like, whew, it's dark, man. I mean, yeah, I was like, I believe I still have this on DVR for that particular interview because and he's got his catchphrase at the end. I'm not, you know. And it's just a classic traditional wrestling promo that's also, you know, pretty modern in a way. But man, that was fantastic.
Yep, and not to sound too much like a shill, as if we aren't anyway, pimping a regional wrestling program. I believe they have all their episodes on YouTube if you just look under Pro Wrestling Ohio or PWO Wrestling. So, yeah, you can seek them out that way if you happen to listen to this and not get to Sports Time Ohio.
Yeah. Well, it adds money to my U-verse bill, but it's worth it. So, and I get a lot of other sports on that, too.
Speaking of sports, thank you for building in that segue. We got a rematch between Mr. Harvey Isaiah Bonds and Daniel Arkham. Is this just good lower card fodder? Is it bad lower card fodder?
Somewhere in there. It's lower card fodder. I mean, I've never seen the guys wrestle hardly anybody else. So, yeah, it was fine.
Yep. And then, well, and this kind of goes back, the next promo was Omega Aaron Draven. And I'm of the mindset that the guy is, it's kind of funny that he is a little bit directionless, which is maybe why, you know, it's upsetting to see him beat Ben Boone the week before. Do you think that that is having a negative impact on anything that he could have done promo-wise, that he doesn't have, like, anybody that he's feuding with right now?
It certainly doesn't help, and the promos of his have always been a bit scattered, in my opinion, that I've seen. So, yeah, it lacked focus a bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's been definitely a weaker part of his game. That I think he still needs to work on a little bit there. But yeah, having something to talk about in particular would really help. another promo. We get Mattson and Boone, you know, back to back here with the guys that wrestle each other. The implied feud here now, since tag team partners, Flip Kendrick is now injured, I guess should be mentioned, would be Ben Boone against Lewis Linden in singles competition. Would that be something that you would look forward to inside the ring?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm certainly not dreading it. They have different styles, but sure. I mean, it's, you know, as you said, Draven doesn't have a place he's going. Boone does. And so, you know, fine interview. As you said, Mattson certainly held his end at the minimum. And, yeah, well, they could certainly have a feud. I don't see a concern about that. I mean, they're both certainly fairly athletic in different ways, and I don't know how they'll mesh. It wouldn't be my dream opponent for Ben Boone, but I'm willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, well, I think at least as far as him trying to get a win, it would it'd be a good feud, because there's no reason so long as Flip Kendrick can come back at some point here, whether it's you know, this season or next. If he ends up losing a feud and Lewis Linden goes back into the tag team division,
good call.
Really, yeah, no harm, no foul. Really, yep. Boone gets to have you know, a decent feud with someone, and Linden isn't really hurt too much.
Good call. Yes, I agree.
So that leads us up to the last thing in episode 11 here, which was the six-man tag match with Gregory Iron, Michael the Bomber Facade, and Jason Bain taking on the Dead Wrestling Society. Now, you had suggested that Gregory Iron and Jason Bain would make a tag team. Does this to try and take away the tag title belts? Does this change your mind about that thought process at all?
Not really. I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, I thought their chemistry was fine. You know, maybe they were just building to this match. I don't know, but you know, every wrestler in that match. I mean, there were three different feuds. Going there, and that made for an intriguing matchup, and as I think we may get to, I mean, Matt Mason got involved again. So then you don't know exactly where Crimson's going to go with this, but you know, he has those tag team titles, and Mason doesn't seem interested in that particularly at this point. So there's a lot of different places they could go, but one option being Bane and Iron challenging for those belts, I think, would be fine. It would make sense. I mean, the individuals involved would certainly have hard feelings for one another. So,
yeah, no, I think that's the interesting part about this situation is that it would be really tough to put more, since he hasn't been with anyone yet, to put him in the position to challenge for the tag belt. And then Jason Bane really, you know, him and Iron work against, to me, they work against that specific set of opponents. But yeah. I don't know what that does for them when they move on from that that point.
Yeah, and I wrote down, and I haven't seen this for a while, but that Iron had a good throw on Jason Gorey somewhere in this match that was that kind of got my attention. So I didn't go back and watch the match right before the before we did this interview, but that got my attention. And then the finishing Bayline looked just vicious, which added to my impressions of the match overall.
Yeah, no, he does a good job of looking big, and both Jason Gorey and Curse did a very good job of selling there.
Yeah, I think it's Curse that he hit at the end, if I'm not mistaken, and I was like, wow, it looked like he just took his head off. I mean, it was quite a good match in a lot of different ways, and again, you know, felt like an old kind of Saturday night's main event type match where you have these different feuds, or an old NWA World Championship Wrestling type match where maybe you've built up to a six man and all these different individual feuds you may see later at the arenas were featured in the match. So I thought for what it was very good, and as you mentioned, it kind of advanced the Moore situation as well. So a lot there, or Mason. Mason.
Situation. Yeah, no, that really is the interesting thing is that it's normally, especially we've mentioned the kind of the paint by numbers booking that they tend to use here, but this one has so many different directions it can go in. It's just kind of like, okay. I'm just kind of waiting for whatever the next step is because it's hard to predict anything because it just seems like they can go a whole lot of different ways with this whole situation involving. It looks like it's pretty clear that Fassad is going to go after Jason Gorey, so I think that part's there, but between Matt Mason, Jason Bane, and Gregor Iron, who are the three baby faces currently. And then you got Crimson and Curse on the other side of the ledger. Gregory Iron for the couple of weeks had been concentrating on Curse even.
Yeah.
That means you're almost down to a three-man dance there in some format with Bane, Matt Moore, or Matt Mason, who we haven't seen in the ring yet either. And I'm not sure if he's on this past week's episode or not. Crimson there. So, any of those parts really, especially since the tag belts are in play with Curse and Crimson being the champions, there's a lot of directions they could go if they really want to. So it's just going to be neat to sit back and watch these next couple episodes unfold here to see where they're going.
Absolutely.
Okie dokie. Well, that wraps up episodes 10 and 11 Do you have any final thoughts there before we sign off?
No, I've noticed that my sign-offs are some of the weakest things on any podcast in the world, so I'll just say that I appreciate everyone listening, and hopefully I'll be in better mood because Missouri will have won the Big 12 tournament next time we speak.
Excellent. Well, grandkids, it is time for a sippy time beer and for me to get my sorry, tired ass to bed. So enjoy and have a good night.
So, isn't this great?